All right, hello everybody, and welcome to the Friday edition of American Hit Radio. I'm your host Tom Ryan here every Wednesday and Friday from 5 o'clock until 6 o'clock. With me, of course, my lovely wife and co-host Heidi Morales Ryan.
On the happiest of happy hours.
Yes, Fridays. It's a great time to be on the
radio.
Yes,
yes.
And this is kind of cool too because we just finished our topic. That we were discussing for about 5 weeks. We had taken a good hard look at some very early jazz piano. We were calling it from boogie to big band, pretty much, and beyond.
You've got the shorter title now.
Yeah, it went on and on and on last week, and it just got more and more complex.
Yeah, don't do that.
Well, what we were basically doing was we were looking at the very early piano players, the stride players from Harlem for the most part, and then how that more or less corresponded with the boogie-woogie style that was coming primarily out of Chicago. And it was rather interesting because for the last show, Heidi, I think you might remember that what we were doing was you were trying to show the connection, how we could go all the way from 1928 right on up to contemporary styles by showing how that eventually led to rock and roll. And one of the last tracks that we played happened to be by the Andrews Sisters, Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy, only because it was obviously a boogie song that which coincided.
Yes.
And it's kind of funny that we can now more or less move on to our next topic with an almost seamless segue, so to speak.
Right. Because, great transition.
Right. Now as we move back toward the present from the 20s, our new topic actually is going to be girl groups. We're going to be discussing the history of girl groups. And in order to do so, I figured the best thing that we really need to do actually is, you know, set the table a little bit to show how that all began and what the background was like, so we can pick up exactly where we left off by playing an Andrews Sisters song from
from
the big band era, and something which is obviously influenced very much by what the stride players and what the boogie-woogie piano players were doing. In fact, this song refers directly to that style, the song called Beat Me Daddy 8 to the Bar.
In a little honky-tonky village in Texas, there's a guy who plays the best piano by far. He can play piano any way that you like it, but the way he likes to play is A to the bar. When he plays, it's a ball, he's the daddy of them all. The people gather around when he gets on the stand. Then when he plays, he gets a hand. The rhythm he beats puts the cats in a trance. Nobody there bothers to dance, but when he plays with the bass and guitar, they holler, oh, beat me, daddy, A to the bar. A plink, a plank, a plink, plank, plink, plank, a plunkin' on the key. A riff, a rap, a riff, rap, riff, rap, a riffin' out with me. And when he plays with the bass and guitar, they holler, oh, beat me, daddy, A to the bar. He plays a boogie, he plays A to the bar, a boogie woogie. That is the way he likes to play on his piano. And we all know that when he plays, he puts them all in a trance. The cats all holler hooray. You hear them say, beat me, daddy, A to the bar. Texas, there's a guy who plays the best piano by far. When he plays with the bass and guitar, they all beat me up, daddy, beat me, daddy, eight to the bar. The people gather around
when he plays with the bass and guitar. They holler, oh, be me, daddy, age of the bar. A plink, plink, a plink, plink. A plink, 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 a plunkin' on the keys. A riff, riff, a riff, riff. A riff, 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 a riffin' out with me. But when he plays with the bass and guitar, they holler, oh, be me, daddy, age of the bar.
One of the biggest groups from the war years, World War II war, that is, the Andrews Sisters, Maxine Laverne and Patty Andrews. One of the biggest.
So they really
groups.
Were sisters.
Yes, they really were sisters. Definitely one of the most successful groups of the first half of the 20th century. And in fact, certainly the most successful female vocal group. There was really hardly anybody else you could even say competed with them. There was another group called the Boswell Sisters, early, I guess, back then, but just really not much. So This is like a good place to start, I guess, as far as trying to pick up the girl group trend that we're going to be trying to cover. It's keeping in mind, I mean, you're hearing that song, of course, as we said, you could hear how that is tied in to like the jazz and the boogie and all the stuff that we were covering earlier. I mean, obviously, this is swing-based jazz that the Andrews Sisters were doing. It's very upbeat, very energetic. Very popular, extraordinarily popular. And it was kind of cool because this is the stuff that became popular music. In the 40s, jazz was pop music. It wasn't like you would imagine jazz is now, where it's sort of like a peripheral style or the, you know, jazz is for, you know, cranial types. Jazz was pop music in the 40s, and it's just what it was. And there's the Andrews Sisters being quite successful at it. You know, very, like I said, energetic. And, you know, and also it's rather interesting because I'm not saying that they were being sexually suggestive, but there was an energy about what they were doing that looked like it probably, like there might have been like, you know, maybe something a little bit under the surface. It gave it an edge, made it kind of cool. And for a while in the 40s, that was acceptable because jazz was like that. It was kind of the nature of jazz, you know. Another singer I'd like to play a track of to show you what popular music was like. I mean, I want to focus on the girl groups mostly. That's what this series is about. But to set it up, I've got to, you know, bring to mind some female performers because there really weren't many girl groups.
Right. Usually it was a female vocalist.
Exactly. So the Andrews Sisters were very important in that regard. That's why we ended our previous series with them and begin this one with them. But another singer, Rosemary Clooney, literally the aunt of George Clooney.
Right.
Was another popular singer, very influenced, you know, rooted in jazz and this big band swing, that sort of thing. And like I said, you could always tell there's a little bit something going on under the surface lyrically with what was happening in the 40s. Kind of made it cool. Like this song. As performed by Rosemary Clooney, it was actually her breakout hit, a song called Come On to My House.
Come on to my house, in my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, in my house, I'm gonna give you apple, plum, and apricot, I do. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, my house, come on. Come on to my house, in my house, I'm gonna give you figs and dates and grapes and cakes, eh? Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you everything. Pomegranate, come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you peach and pear and I love your hair. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, come on. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you east side. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you everything. Everything, everything. Come on to my house.
That's pretty awesome. That's Rosemary Clooney, a song that actually goes back to 1951. So it's a little bit later than I might have otherwise expected. But that Rosemary Clooney, as I said, in the year 1951. Now, for the most part, though, what was happening as the big band era began to wind down in the late 40s and early 50s, mm-hmm. the bands were getting smaller. And to really set up the table, for like where we're trying to go with the girl group thing, you've got to keep a few things in mind. Culturally, what was happening in America, for example. First of all, what was happening in the 50s? Well, hot jazz was going out of fashion. Jazz was becoming cool, quite literally. You know, the word cool ended up being, entering our lexicon. The word, you know, we still use it all the time as if I could wait to say how something is basically hip or new. What it really stems from is it was the anti-hot. When hot jazz began to grow unfashionable and you had various styles that were coming up in the 50s, well, they referred to themselves as being cool jazz, just to be different. It's always the way, right? So things there are becoming a little bit more distant. The in-your-face aspect of the music is all of a sudden beginning to drift away. Jazz is becoming cranial. Also, at the exact same time now, you know, because of this, you know, swing pop music began to become safe pop music because jazz was becoming cranial. So that went off right in a different direction. So if the jazz element is taken out of the popular music, you're kind of left with something which is a much safer strain. And you add in to this mix the fact that McCarthyism is beginning to come on the rise in the wake of World War II, and there's a certain paranoia that's setting in, and a conservatism is sweeping the country. This creeps into our pop music. So the female singers, again, there's like virtually no groups that I can speak of, really, say from like the late 40s to the early 50s. The female vocalists are almost all solo performers, and almost all of them are performing in a very safe style. So what we're going to do right now is we're going to pretty much segue a few of these artists so that you can hear exactly what it is that I'm talking about. We're going to be hearing people who at that time were quite famous, big stars, people like Dinah Shore, Teresa Brewer, Patti Page, Doris Day, and Joe Stafford, all of them very representative of the sound of the late 40s to the early 50s, the pre-rock and roll, pre-girl group, sort of setting the table with their own styles, starting with this track by Dinah Shore, a song called Anniversary Song.
I love I was dancing with my darling to the Tennessee waltz when an old friend I happened to see. I introduced her to my loved one, and while they were dancing, my friend stole my sweetheart from me. I remember the night and the Tennessee waltz. Now I know just how much I have lost. Yes, I lost my little darling the night they were playing the beautiful Tennessee.
A secret love that lived within the heart of me. All too soon, my secret love became impatient to be free. So I told a friendly star the way that dreamers often do, just how wonderful you are and why I'm so in love with you. Secret love's no secret anymore.
See the pyramids along the Nile. The sunrise on a tree.
just remember till you're home again, you belong to me. I'll be so alone and without you.
A bit of a medley to set up the state of popular music before the onset of rock and roll as the 50s set in, what was happening, especially from the perspective of female vocalists. We heard some, I would say, very typical examples of what popular music was like from a female perspective at that time. We heard Joe Stafford right there singing You Belong to Me. Before that, we heard Doris Day singing Secret Love, one of her biggest hits. Patti Page with Tennessee Waltz, a huge hit for Patti Page.
It's a good selection of songs. I think they're all kind of remained classics for a long, long time.
Yeah, in their own way. Exactly. They're very nice songs. They're great. But they're also, you know, very, very innocent. All the sexuality is ringed out of whatever could have possibly, like, Come On to My House is just not even in the... You know what I mean? So it's not even a possibility.
I'm going to give you candy.
Right. Ooh, it just makes you think. You know. So all the sexuality is gone. All the race elements that would have been, you know, part of like I guess R&B music, whatever. Again, totally gone. The songs are lush. They're very romantic, but, you know, mostly very innocent.
Yes.
Very innocent.
They've been whitewashed.
Right. Which is a lot to do with why when rock and roll began in 1955, it was essentially a men's club, because the status of women in popular music at that point in time was to put at least a pretension of innocence.
Right, they couldn't be raunchy.
Right. It just wouldn't have been appropriate. The times wouldn't have allowed it. But it was okay for, you know, a guy like Chuck Berry or for Elvis or Jerry Lee. You could be downright lascivious if you know, whatever. But the woman could never get away with that.
And right. Wanda Jackson was a barrier breaker, though.
Very much so. She was absolutely, I mean, she's one of the very, very few exceptions to that rule about early rock and roll.
Yeah.
It's just true. If you were going to try to find out, you know, where women were actually still being able to be themselves, you'd have to leave popular music altogether, because at this time, again, because of the way that for some reason, you know, whether it's just the segregation of styles or maybe even the segregation of cultures, you had R&B artists and you had these pop artists and they rarely met. So a really good example of what I'm talking about would be a singer like Etta James. Now, Etta James is coming up really around the same time as these female vocalists that we just played. And, you know, she's on the West Coast and Johnny Otis discovers her and actually singing with a group of friends. And he decides that he's going to bring her in. And what she'd actually done was she had actually written a song. Hank Ballard and the Midnighters had a song called Work With Me, Annie, which was essentially, you know, basically a sex song. That never could have
and
gotten anywhere near.
And she did some work with me, Henry, right?
Right. Roll With Me, Henry.
Roll With Me, Henry. That's
so
what it was.
It was like her answer song to Hank Ballard. And in fact, that's what she released as a hit. And the record labels, although it was, you know, now with Johnny Otis supporting her, she ends up getting signed. But everybody was afraid of that. So they ended up saying, we've got to change the name of that song. So it became The Wallflower, or a.k.a. Dance With Me, Henry.
Oh.
And let's hear that track by Etta James, just so we can set this up to see how different R&B music was from the pop music of that era.
Hey, baby, this is what you have to do to make me love you, too. You gotta dance with me, Henry.
music goes on, roll on, roll on, roll on. Woo, woo, woo-wee. Henry, you ain't moving me. You better feel that boogie beat and get it laid out of your feet. You got to dance with me, Henry. Swing with me, Henry. Rock with me, Henry. Cling to me, Henry. Dance with me, Henry. You better dance while the music goes on. Roll on, roll on, roll on.
From today's perspective, that song's nothing but fine. You know, you'd hear the oh, great track, you know.
Absolutely.
But when you are, well, I guess when you have radio stations that are playing things like Secret Love and Anniversary Song and You Belong to Me and Tennessee Waltz, this sort of stuff, that song just sounds flat out.
It's bawdy.
Threatening, bawdy. Right. So it was absolutely kept off of pop radio, relegated exclusively to black markets, the R&B circuit. But it was obviously drawing attention, and rock and roll was beginning to, there were noises on the fringe of the marketplace about, you know, rock and roll artists coming out. So what was decided that would be done is now you have like the Pat Boone effect, where artists start to cover songs that are becoming popular on the R&B circuit. They introduce it to the pop marketplace, which was a totally different thing. Mm-hmm. Very separate. So people who are, you know, in middle America who would never go near anything that would have anything to do with anything as suggestive as what Etta James would be doing, they'd have no problem hearing a prim and proper woman like Georgia Gibbs singing her white version of the exact same song. And in fact, when Georgia Gibbs recorded her version of the song, it ended up becoming a number one hit.
Oh, my goodness.
In 1955. Number one for 3 weeks. Here's Georgia Gibbs singing the same song.
Hey, baby, what do I have to do to make a hit with you?
You gotta dance with me, Henry.
All right, baby.
Dance with me, Henry.
Don't mean baby.
Rock with me, Henry.
Any old time.
Talk to me, Henry.
Don't change.
In a minute,
roll, roll, roll.
So you better get
That is what you would call sanitized R&B. And if you compare the two, now, of course, it's such a shame because you got somebody like Etta James, who is forced to be peripheral on the side of the scenes. And here's Georgia Gibbs. It really has nothing to do with the song. She didn't write it. I mean, Etta James wrote her answer song and came up with this original concept as an answer to Hank Ballard. All Georgia Gibbs did was just essentially copy it, come up with a really white bread version, lame imitation of it, and it becomes a number one hit for her for 3 weeks. So this is how, this is, like I said, we're just setting the table now, because this show is ultimately, I want to talk about girl groups. And up until this point, we've really only been talking about single artists, because that's all that there really were at this point. So let's get to the groups. Let's start discussing right now, as the rock and roll era begins around 1955, something starts to happen in terms of like girl groups beginning to come back in favor. Not necessarily as groups, but very actually kind of the opposite, coming together very much in the mold of what the Andrews Sisters originally represented from back in the 30s and the 40s. As the Andrews Sisters really were sisters, the girl groups that began to become known as rock and roll began to hit were, again, really sisters. And what the girls were doing at this point really was providing an antidote to the rock and roll that was out there. While the boys are out there, like you said, Heidi, they're out there like, making trouble.
Yeah.
Being bawdy or, being what boys can do, girls can't do it. So the girls start forming groups and they become kind of like I said, the anti-rock and roll. And one of the biggest artists of the mid-50s, again, a girl group doing a hit that was huge on the R&B chart, but again, not given the opportunity to really get particularly huge. So the McGuire Sisters in this, for example, with this next track, decided to cover a song by the Moonglows. And for them, it becomes a number one hit for 10 weeks.
Wow.
Now, these days, this song is totally forgotten. We only know the song by the Moonglows. Thank goodness that good taste prevails. 50 years on, that's the song that we know. But check out what was being played on the radio on a daily basis, number one for 10 weeks back in 1955 by the McGuire Sisters. Here's their version of the song, Sincerely.
Let him go sincerely.
the McGuire sisters. As I said, now really the suggestion of a girl group, at least in the beginning of the rock and roll era. But I mean, it's so well, the Moon Glows were struggling to get their track heard on pop radio, and they were successful. They did get to number 20, which was actually a breakthrough, because a lot of the R&B artists who were releasing music at around this time couldn't even get on the pop charts. So it was a sign of change that the Moon Glows were beginning to break through. And this is also the beginning of like rock and roll beginning to have an impact, because rock and roll was decidedly about a reunification in a sense of like the styles of black artists and the white artists, you know, incorporating the two together. After all, wasn't that what everybody said Elvis was?
Right.
You know, a white man who could actually, you know, bring the sounds and the flavor of like black music to the white side. So hooray for the Moon Glows to do that. But while they're at number 20, here's the McGuire sisters at number one for 10 weeks. Rather incredible, with their Ivory Soap version of the exact same song. What's really, I mean, this is like so beguiling in a way, because these girls are so, their naivete was like almost remarkable. When they were like, before they were famous, Dorothy, Christine, and Phyllis, actually, they were singing around, you know, I guess, you know, they were daughters of an ordained minister, you know, they sang for their church and everything else. So I guess that happens in white culture too. How about that? But they actually, you know, they wanted to become famous. So they actually did it by, they found out that, you know, Arthur Godfrey had a talent show. So they literally went to like the studio where he filmed a show and like waited outside to get in, seeing if they could get onto the show.
Oh, that's cute.
And it actually worked. It actually, I mean, this stuff never happens. Not only did they got in, and the next thing you know, they brought to the attention of people like Gordon Jenkins, the band leader, and Decca Records ends up signing them, and boom, they're off. And they become this sensation. And just at the dawn of the rock and roll era, the McGuire sisters are the biggest thing that could be happening in the year 1955. And like I said, so really I guess the record labels are thinking of the McGuire sisters sort of as like a safety zone, like a buffer from the rock and roll, trying to use them as a means of wooing some of the youngsters away from these crazy males, whatever they're doing. You know, listen, what we need is more groups like the McGuire sisters. So it's songs like, of course, Sincerely. And here's another song that was a big hit for them a couple years later in the middle of rock and roll, 1957, when rock and roll was totally nuts. They released this song. It was their second number one hit, this time for 4 weeks. This rather sweet piece of pablum called Sugar Time. There you go.
That's enough of that.
Well, just to give the idea, right? Of course, that's the McGuire sisters. Now, again, it becomes something of a trend because of the success of the McGuire sisters. Sister groups become a big thing in the mid-50s.
So even if you weren't a sister group, you could claim you were sisters just to like have more of an opportunity.
You know, I'm sure that eventually did happen, but the ones that I've actually got as examples really were sister groups. They really all were. Like, for example, this next group, the Fontaine sisters, B, Jerry, and Marge Rossi, actually, their last name. I don't know how they ended up with the name Fontaine rather than Rossi, but they became famous as the Fontaine sisters. And they had a hit in the early days of rock and roll with this track called Hearts of Stone.
Hearts made of stone. Stone will cause you pain.
Another track that dates back to the very beginning of rock and roll, actually released in late 1954 and became a number one hit in early 1955, number one for 3 weeks for the Fontaine Sisters, that track called Hearts of Stone. One more sister group I'd like to cover from the same era, more or less. A very interesting history, actually, for this group. I'm talking about Peggy, Cherie, and Babette DeCastro. Actually, they were raised in Havana, had a family mansion in Havana, very big, I think they were part of like a sugar
plantation.
Yeah, had a sugar plantation that was eventually seized by Fidel Castro during the Cuban Revolution. Their home still exists, apparently. Right now, it's being used as the Chinese embassy.
Wow.
In Cuba. They ended up relocating in New York, lived in the Dakota Building in New York City for a long time, and became rather popular. The three sisters, with their parents, you know, chaperoning them and everything else as they were young, brought them up, had them booked in the Copacabana and stuff. So not a rock and roll background, but at this same time, more or less, they were having hits, including this song by the DeCastro sisters called Boom Boom Boomerang. Another sister group, just to, as I said, you know, we could do this for a long time if we wanted to, but we could also, I'd rather move on and just to give you a few more examples. Another actually is an artist that actually goes back, a song that goes all the way back to, let me see if I can actually find the original recording of this. I don't see it as a hit, but there was apparently an artist by the name of Billy Rose that had a minor hit with a song that goes back to maybe the 30s or so, and two young sisters named Patience and Prudence had learned this song at summer camp.
Nice.
You can imagine, and somehow it becomes a hit. Of course, again, now this is in the middle of the rock and roll era. As I said, the start of the rock and roll era, it's all about sister groups. Well, they didn't have a third, but it's two sisters, Patience and Prudence, singing their version of this very old song called Tonight You Belong to Me.
Heart of my heart.
All right, I think the point is made here that what is happening more than anything else is that it was kind of important that, you know, you and you could sing with your sisters if you wanted to be a female artist in the 50s. It's kind of what it was like, more or less. I wouldn't say required, but you know, these things happen in trends, fashion trends almost.
Right.
And you can see how, like when you think about the major rock and roll artists, they're all men. It was a men's club. Rock and roll was essentially a big men's club. Girls were allowed to be in the audience, and if you wanted to perform, well, sing with your sisters. Try to make something like that work. One group that managed to be successful throughout the early part of rock and roll that was not sisters is a group of four girls, actually, that came from, of all places, Sheboygan, Wisconsin. They called themselves the Cordettes, and they had some of the more interesting harmony-type hits for females around 1954, and one of the very few girl groups that you could find from this era that were not sisters. So in that sense, they're very important to the history of the girl group sound. Here was their debut hit, the thing that pretty much broke them wide open, number one for 7 weeks from 1954 and around 1955, the Cordettes singing Mr. Sandman. Bum, 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 Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Bum, 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 bum. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Bum, 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 bum. Give him two lips like roses and clover. Bum, 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 bum. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over. Sandman, bum, bum, bum. Don't have nobody to call my own. Bum, 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 bum. Please turn on your magic beam. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever. Give him the word that I'm not a rover. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over. Sandman, I'm so alone. Don't have nobody to call my own. Please turn on your magic beam. Oh, Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Bum, 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 bum.
Tell you why, this kiss is sweeter than an apple pie. Kiss me on a Monday, a Monday, a Monday is very, very good. Or you can kiss me on a Tuesday, a Tuesday, a Tuesday, in fact I wish you would. Or you can kiss me on a Wednesday, a Thursday, a Friday, and Saturday is best. But never, never on a Sunday, a Sunday, a Sunday, 'cause that's my day of rest. Most any day you can be my guest, any day you say, but my day of rest. Just name the day that you like the best, only stay away on my day.
Never on a Sunday.
I wonder how many people don't even were not aware of the fact that that song had words. And if you were unaware of that it had words, you're lucky. You know, I actually had that record when I was a little kid. I remember the Cadence label. That was one of those things that I had that I guess the next jukebox record when I was around two or three that I would play all the time. And I remember my mom liked it, that song. You can see, of course, that the Cordettes were very popular and they're very talented.
I can see why your mom liked it.
Yeah, that track, of course, is a bit silly, though, really. But, I mean, songs like Born to Be With You and Mr. Sandman were really quite good numbers. And it definitely showed that they had a considerable amount of talent. But they were definitely the exception to the rule in that they weren't sisters.
Right.
And they were also another group that was not beyond doing their own versions of R&B songs. I believe Lollipop actually is an example of that. Lollipop is something that came from the R&B market. And there was another song that the Cordettes had recorded their own version of. And actually, the last track we're going to be playing today to set up the girl group thing is quite, I guess, a real a genre breaker. Because it was a group called the Teen Queens that really began to make the difference in terms of like really getting girls involved in rock and roll from a point of subject matter, perspective, female perspective, all of that. Their hit was a song called Eddie My Love. Now, the Cordettes recorded their own version of it, had a hit with it. The Fontaine Sisters, who we played earlier, they also took a version of the same song and recorded it. But luckily for the Teen Queens, their own version did prevail. And it became a reasonable hit for the Teen Queens. Who were the Teen Queens? Well, they were Betty and Rosie Collins. They were sisters. Again, sister groups. You can see where this is all going. Now, we're going to pick up this show next week, where we're leaving off here, as we enter the real, true, classic era of girl groups. And when it does hit, it hits huge. We'll leave you there with this track by the Teen Queens. As I said, Betty and Rosie Collins singing their version of Eddie My Love. Take care, everybody. See you next week.